You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're reflecting on the late civil rights icon, Congressman John Lewis. On Bloody Sunday in Selma, Alabama, he and other marchers were brutally beaten in 1965. The Selma to Montgomery March, that was a turning point for a national voting rights act. Politico is reporting House Democrats are discussing plans for a voting rights package, which would renew and expand the Voting Rights Act of 1965 as a tribute to him. How do you want the 17-term congressman to be remembered? How should activists continue his voting rights work? We're at 800-642-1234. Gwen Moore is a Democratic representative from Wisconsin's 4th District. Congressman Moore, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Oh, so glad to be with you, Kate.
Well, my sympathies to you on the loss of your colleague and friend. You've been remembering Congressman Lewis this week as the peaceful protester, the nonviolent protester, as you said, putting his body into it, arrested many times. You recall being arrested with him years ago. Can you share some memories of activism?
Absolutely. I was an activist as a young person and got into trouble with my mom, actually, for participating in the Father Grappi and Vail Phillips marches back in the 60s. But meeting John Lewis reinvigorated those notions. And as you mentioned, you know, I went to jail with him one day. Pretty bad experience. He did it 40, 50 times. Boy, that was some rough rough duty. You know, they didn't hand us any Clorox cleanup. I sat on the floor with him as we took over the House floor in 2016 to protest the lack of gun violence. And I have a real funny memory of that. I had really bad knees and I sat on the floor and then couldn't get up.
Oh, dear.
And Tammy Duckworth, Senator Tammy Duckworth
of Illinois.
A Representative Duckworth was there, the double amputee. And I got up off the floor. She said, come over. And she came over and had me climb on her back to hoist myself up. But that's an aside. He was a gentle giant. He was the embodiment of humility and ethics and really, you know, standing up for what you believe. And you could talk to any Republican and they would tell you the same thing. And I guess that's where the rubber meets the road, because you could find a lot of friendly Republicans who would say laudable things about John Lewis. But what we really need to do to honor him is to pass the Voting Rights Act, and we name it the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. You know, your listeners may remember the Shelby County versus Holder decision, where basically the court gutted the Voting Rights Act, and immediately after doing that, I mean, you had Alabama. Within hours of the Shelby County decision, Texas put a voting ID law in, and within days, Alabama announced it would enforce a photo ID law. Only months later, North Carolina passed what was known as the Monster Law, a sweeping voter suppression bill requiring strict forms of voter ID. And of course, by 2016, Wisconsin joined a number of states in enacting new restrictions on voting and cutting early voting and who can collect absentee ballots. And as you know, I mean, you may not know, but I fought former Representative Scott Walker and ultimately Governor Scott Walker from 1992 until 2016 on voter ID. And finally, a voter ID was established in 2016. And of course, the rest is history in terms of the numbers the tens of thousands of people who were disenfranchised because of voter ID in 2016. And Wisconsin went for Donald Trump.
We're talking with Gwen Moore, Democratic representative from Wisconsin's 4th District, which includes parts of the Milwaukee region. How do you think Congressman John Lewis will be remembered? What do you think his greatest contributions were? How should activists continue John Lewis's work? We're at 800-642-1234. Congresswoman, the Democrats are considering this new voting rights legislation, which some are calling it to be named after Lewis, you included. What would this package look like, and what is the timeline here?
Well, H.R. 4 is not new. Basically, it would restore some of the pre-clearance requirements. What Shelby County versus Holder did was jurisdictions that had demonstrated in the past a willingness to disenfranchise people, when they gutted it, it really, again, the list that I just shared with the listeners is the kind of stuff that they did. And it restores the full protections of the Voting Rights Act. It updates the pre-clearance formula used to determine which states and political subdivisions must pre-clear their voting and registration procedures before they can take effect. You know, you can't just put a voter ID law in without pre-clearing it and demonstrating how it won't disenfranchise people. It increases the transparency by requiring the reasonable public notice for voting changes. We, you know, just note what happened on the Native American lands when, you know, last cycle, when suddenly Native Americans were required to have an address with streets on it, although they had voted up to that point without that requirement, but at the last minute, creating some just insurmountable obstacles to voting.
Well, let's let's take a call now. Linda is with us from Monroe. Linda, hi.
Hi. Good morning. I favor early voting or absentee voting, and I wonder what the representative feels on that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I believe that people have different needs, and voting ought to be accessible to people any way that they can vote. People can vote safely from their home with an absentee ballot. No excuse needed. You don't have to say that, you know, I'm sick or I'm going to be out of town or whatever. Just you might choose to vote safely from your home. Or there are people who like to have in-person voting. I'm one of the people that I really like to vote on Election Day. And that option ought to be available to people, too. Some of the things that we've seen done with regard to since Shelby County versus Holder is that one of the things that's happened is that they have restricted voting rights. I remember efforts all around the country, for example, to stop the quote unquote souls to the polls initiatives, where churches would take busloads of people to the courthouse after church services on Sunday. And, you know, to stop that kind of activity was nothing but voter suppression.
You have a line to Representative Gwen Moore as we talk about the legacy of her colleague, Congressman John Lewis. The future of voting rights in America, other issues front and center amid the pandemic. What questions do you have for Congresswoman Moore about what lawmakers are doing to fight the pandemic and address the economic fallout? What do you want her to prioritize on Capitol Hill? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Congresswoman Gwen Moore here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, it is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have U.S. Representative Gwen Moore on the line as we reflect on the legacy of Congressman John Lewis and voting rights issues faced in America today. With your thoughts as well, let's bring in another call now, and it is former Senator Bob Welch on the line. Hi.
Hey, Bob Welch.
No, good morning. This is State Senator Bob Wirch.
Oh,
from Kenosha.
I'm so sorry.
Hey.
Yeah, Gwen is my former colleague when she was in the state Senate.
Absolutely.
And, yes, and we were both at Local 72 in 2013 when they were honoring John Lewis on the Martin Luther King celebration. And I'll never forget John Lewis was talking about when he was young and poor and practicing preaching, and he would preach to the chickens. He would preach to the chickens out in the farmyard. And he got the whole place laughing about that. But I would like to see the Edmund Prentice Bridge renamed the John Lewis Bridge and have people continue to go there every year to remember what happened at that site.
Mm. Thank you so much for calling in. Congresswoman Moore, there has been a lot of push to rename that bridge.
Senator Wirch, it's so good to hear your voice. It really is. You know, I think it would be a fantastic tribute to rename the bridge. There have been efforts even before John Lewis's death to have that happen. But I just want to keep the eye on the prize, to borrow that term from John Lewis. The prize really is passing the Voting Rights Act. And by the way, you know, not only does the bill sort of restore the protections under the Voting Rights Act that were taken with the court, with the Shelby, but it also provides money for elections and to secure and to buoy the efforts of these local officials who would actually administer the elections to make sure that that mail-in ballots, that option really is available. It's comprehensive. And that's the real way to honor John Lewis. And of course, the Edmund Pettus Bridge. Edmund Pettus was a Confederate general, a member of the KKK. And so very clearly, the bridge is a monument to the wrong sort of value that we have as a multicultural country.
Well, let's take another call now. Tom is here from Madison. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. I greatly admire the work done by Congressman John Lewis through the course of his career, and also of yourself in your role in Congress. And I support these changes, amendments, or a new Voting Rights Act. But we also need other fundamental electoral reforms. We do need term limits. Nobody should count on 17 terms or 15 terms or 12 terms in Congress. We need more political parties. We need the choice on the ballot. None of the above. You know, we talk about diversity, but you have the same people going back into Congress and the Senate time and time and time again. We have 340 million people in this country, and it's time to give them a voice. We need to be able to vote by internet. We need to be.
And Tom, I want to just allow Representative Moore to respond there on term limits.
Okay, well, thank you. You know, that's a you know, the real deal is that we do have term limits. I only get elected every 2 years, and if people don't like me or John Lewis, they have the opportunity to throw people out, and it happens every once in a while. I can think of a couple of people I would love to throw out. I would love to unelect. But, you know, that's incumbent upon democracy and people voting, and not something artificial like term limits. Because I'll tell you what term limits do. What they do, and this has been litigated for Congress, it empowers lobbyists. You know, so that if I have a special interest, be it, you know, health care or, you know, fossil fuels, where I want to, you know, I don't want a clean economy. All I got to do is sit out that legislator who comes in there, fire in their belly, wanting a green economy, and, you know, you've limited them to three terms. You know, all I got to do is wait them out. It empowers the bureaucracy, you know, unless you want to change that too. You know, someone in the bureaucracy has the opposite view. They're an environmentalist, and you're this, you know, you're a Republican who wants to make sure that the fossil fuel industry gets represented and there are numbers of jobs connected to it, and you come in there with fire in your belly, but you're limited for three terms, and that bureaucrat who's there and they are, you know, kissing and hugging the Wisconsin Conservation Corps just wastes you out. That's the problem with term limits.
Okay.
We need to revive the vote and make sure people are informed about candidates. And we need to reform the way we fund campaigns. I think that's the issue as well.
Congresswoman, I want to make sure we spend a few minutes on the new coronavirus relief package that is being negotiated, debated on Capitol Hill. How do you see this working out and coming together on the second round of relief aid?
Thank you, Kay, for asking that. You know, Mitch McConnell has had the HEROES package sitting there collecting dust or dirt in his graveyard since May. The theory being that Republicans were just going to make the economy magically open back up and didn't want to disincentivize people of going back to work or to school by giving them more money. But the reality is upon us. You know, all of these efforts to prevent people from being evicted from how all of these protections are ending July 1st. Unemployment insurance, we still have 11-12% unemployment. So they're having their epiphany that they've got to do something. Lest the misery index be increased. But what they really don't want, they want to pick apart the HEROES Act and provide more PPP for businesses and maybe some relief for individuals. But what they really want to avoid is to providing that money that's in that bill for election protection. And I mentioned it earlier, what's in the HEROES Act. And also,
and Democrats are proposing $3.6 billion for election security. How would that be used?
Well, whether or not it can be delivered in a timely manner. You know, you take jurisdictions like Milwaukee, for example. Remember, during the pandemic, we had 180 sites that were reduced to 5 sites in the pandemic. We didn't have enough poll workers
in the April election.
In the April election, I mean, we need to make sure that we have money to either stand up people who can be there with the appropriate PPP, or we need to make sure that we can do what we're planning on doing, to send out absentee ballots to everybody, make sure the post office, and there's also money in the package for that, to make sure the post office has the capacity to deliver this mail.
Democrats' plan includes $25 billion to help the Postal Service.
Exactly. Thank you, Kate. You are a great partner here in this conversation.
Well, I want to quickly ask you about the $600 a week unemployment benefits that go away at the end of the month. Would you like to see these extended? And if so, for how long?
Of course, Kate. And I mean, we've got just here in the state of Wisconsin, we've got about 141,000 people in Wisconsin who already haven't received any unemployment benefits at all. And, you know, and so it's not even that they're losing benefits that they've had. They never even got it. And so we are very, very far behind in lifting people up. We're going to see many more evictions. Like I said, the misery index is great. And these Republicans are going to pay a price, I think, nationwide for miscalculating how you should treat people in a pandemic of this sort.
Are there any items in the Democrats' proposal that you would be okay dropping in the event of a compromise?
Well, I think adding more money to the PPP, of course, that would not be seen as a compromise on the part of the Republicans. I think they want to drop the post office. They want to drop election dollars. And I just think that that just is not something that we are willing to negotiate. I think that that's the target of their efforts. And I think that they need to come and make sure we have safe, fair elections.
Congresswoman Moore, thank you for joining us.
Always, always a pleasure. Always.
Gwen Moore is a Democratic representative from Wisconsin's 4th District. She served in Congress with civil rights leader John Lewis, who died last week at age 80. Coming up, we talk with the Secretary of Wisconsin's DNR about how many residents are rediscovering the outdoors during the pandemic. It's after a news update here on the Ideas Network. We're talking with the head of the state DNR, the Department of Natural Resources, on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. The DNR is reminding state park visitors to keep up the social distancing of 6 feet. The DNR started allowing group camping for groups of 50 people or fewer last week. Have you been getting outdoors this summer? Has the pandemic made you want to spend time in nature? Have been able to get the appropriate boating, fishing, or hunting licenses? We're at 800-642-1234. Preston Cole is the Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Secretary Cole, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate, for having me. I'm a big fan of your show and one of the largest drive time shows in America. So thank you for having me.
All right. Well, so what sort of uptick in outdoor recreation have you been noticing as you watch the numbers during the pandemic? How are people using state parks, for instance?
Well, Kate, I'm happy to report across the board, outdoor recreation in the state of Wisconsin is upticking largely across our state park system. Our fishing licenses are up. Boating licenses are up. Bike sales have gone through the roof. And, of course, our state parks, you know, we have, you know, 49 state parks, 15 state forests, and a myriad of state trails in the state of Wisconsin. And all of those provide a wonderful opportunity because generations of Wisconsinites have made a big investment in outdoor recreation. And that means that we have all the requisite sporting activities that Wisconsinites and visitors to Wisconsin can partake in. And again, I'm happy to report that we have seen a value-added proposition during these times of COVID on the landscape that people are spending more time outdoors.
Well,
because
and
we
when,
know that. Go ahead.
When you see those license numbers up, I mean, fishing and turkey licenses are up 20%?
Absolutely. And again, being out in the outdoors does wonders, not only for our physical well-being during these uncertain times, but also Wisconsin's economic well-being. And we've made those investments in partnership with our Office of Outdoor Recreation and Tourism. And so they've seen across the board on Travel Wisconsin, you know, upticks in like 371% in people searching on what to do in outdoors in Wisconsin. That's a good problem to have. And so we continue to be excited that people are making their way, getting into the outdoors, and, you know, taking advantage of what we have to offer. And again,
early on,
because of the investment.
Yeah, earlier in the pandemic, state parks were grappling with an onslaught of people. There was also vandalism. How are they doing now?
Well, Wisconsinites are smart. And what we've done is educate folks to make sure that when they come into the state parks and practice social distancing, they can have a wonderful experience. And on occasion, early in the spring, we saw some unfortunate circumstances with, you know, vandalism to our restrooms and some graffiti work. Now, all of that has subsided by now. And again, we've had a lot of uptick from folks from the state of Illinois. And folks may remember that Illinois state parks you know, open probably 2.5-3 months after we opened ours. And so we had an onslaught of visitors from the state of Illinois coming to take advantage of, you know, what we have to offer. And so what we've been able to do is, again, focus on social distancing, focus on folks when they're coming into the parks to, you know, practice those activities. And quite frankly, on occasion, we have temporary closures. And what that means is that we hold the line of folks coming into the park until numbers begin to fall as it relates to people that are on the landscape. That's worked harmoniously with the patience of the folks to wait until park users begin to leave and other new park visitors want to come in. And again, Wisconsinites have been very adaptive to the seasonal changes. And quite frankly, they're moving around our state parks. We saw a large uptick in Devil's Lake State Park and Mirror Lake. And now, across the state, from our Kettle Moraine to High Cliff to certainly there in Madison, you know, Governor Nelson and Governor Dodge are all seeing, you know, across the board increases in terms of visitorships. And so we're happy to report that, you know, people have been adaptive to temporary closures.
Are you able to keep up with CDC recommended sanitation guidelines? I'm thinking of the high touch points like the payment boxes and the bathrooms.
Well, those payment boxes, we've turned them off because those are pinch points where people would gather. You know, our offices are closed, and so folks to get into our state parks now have to go online at the Wisconsin DNR website and get their $25 annual state park pass. And that allows folks not to congregate at those electronic stations. Also, what we've done on water fountains, what we've been able to do is close off that water fountain and only allow for jug filling at those water fountains. Those water fountains are high touch points, and we've capped those off. And, of course, in bathrooms, and showers, we made all the requisite adjustments to allow folks to use those restrooms safely. And again, shower houses are single use, so there's only one person that can go into the shower house at any one particular time while they're camping with us. We spread out picnic tables. We, again, made some closures to and remove picnic tables where there were too many picnic tables that didn't allow folks to social distance. So we've been very adaptive to CDC's recommendations on the landscape, and I think people appreciate that.
If you're just joining us, we have Wisconsin DNR Secretary Preston Cole with us. We're getting an update on outdoor recreation now. What would you like to see addressed in our state parks and natural areas? Have you been camping in state parks recently? What was the experience like? We're at 800-642-1234. Secretary Cole, earlier this month, the DNR started allowing group camping of up to 50 people. How is the department ensuring that people safely patronize the state parks during the pandemic?
Again, with group camping, those are, you know, big, wide open areas. And so what we've allowed folks to do is gather in such a way that safety first. And so staff is always paying attention to these types of camping activities, specifically in large group numbers. And I haven't had any complaints from the public, from the visitors, or for staff. And so what we believe, when there are a large number of groups on our properties, they're behaving admirably as it relates to social distancing. And we're proud of that fact.
I want to turn now to the issues with water. Algae blooms continue to occur on our state waterways. What steps is the DNR taking to reduce phosphorus pollution?
Well, as you know, what we put on the land ultimately winds up in our waterways. These algal blooms not only create, you know, these visual encumbrances of the natural beauty of our lakes and rivers, but it also can, you know, irritate the skin. So consequently, the Department of Natural Resources, you know, there's a phosphorus rule that's out there. If you're a homeowner and you know that your fertilizer no longer has phosphorus in it. And so those are the types of ways that we pay attention. But consequently, we have a wonderful relationship with the farming community, whereby we find various ways to lock up phosphorus in the soil. I'll give you an example of New Water, which is a water treatment facility in Green Bay. They are able to extract phosphorus from the system that runs off the land into their system, and consequently are able to capture phosphorus before releasing it back to into Green Bay.
Are you replicating that elsewhere?
Well, I can tell you this, that there are many sewage treatment plants around the state that are trying to be adaptive to phosphorus. But again, what we put on the land, whether it's our farm fields or whether it's our landscapes, ultimately winds up in our water. So we have to be diligent and educate folks, both in the agricultural community and our partners in the agricultural community and our sewage treatment facilities, to be headstrong about removing as phosphorus where we can and capture it simply by slowing it down through grassy waterways before it reaches our more important streams and fishing lakes and the like.
Let's look at forever chemicals, PFAS. Last month, the Natural Resources Board approved the DNR's ability to make regulations on firefighting foam that contains PFAS. What guidelines can fire departments expect to see on handling PFAS?
Well, later today, I'll be joining my Midwestern colleagues as it relates to PFAS and where states are at this particular time. And we're no different than many states as we begin to develop rulemaking. And so we're just began that process in the state of Wisconsin. And, of course, our work just beginning will be replicated in the upper Midwest. So we act in unison with the state of Michigan and Indiana and Illinois and the like. And so we lean on each other for the best practical purposes to manage these forever chemicals, because certainly there's drama associated with this in terms of, you know, firefighting foam. But we want to make sure that we're very judicious and smart about the application of rulemaking as we go through the process and the understanding of the impacts.
You surveyed the fire departments around the state to find out where the foam is. Do you have any results of that inventory?
I have yet to get briefed on the results of that inventory. And again, my responsibility is to make sure that we're waiting on that information, and once we get it, we'll make that information public.
We're working through a range of issues with DNR Secretary Preston Cole here. What do you want to know about the health effects of water issues in your area? What questions do you have about the work to regulate chemical contaminants in water? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in a minute with Secretary Cole right here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have DNR Secretary Preston Cole on the line as we work through a range of issues. What regulations do you want around water contamination and cleanup? What questions do you have for the leader of the state DNR? What do you want to know about water quality and the work of the DNR? Are you concerned about phosphorus pollution? Do you support strategies to mitigate it? Join in to the discussion, 800-642-1234. And DNR Secretary Preston Cole stays with us. Let's look at the high-capacity wells issue. In recent years, there's been differing guidance on whether the DNR could consider the impact on nearby bodies of water when regulating high-capacity wells. Current guidelines allow for local waterways to be considered. What else is on the table with high-capacity wells?
Well, I'll say this. Our responsibility around high-cap well is pay attention to the science, and we will continue to do that with the Attorney General recommendation to allow us to pay attention to the science around high-cap wells and the implications of adjacent high cap wells as it relates to the headwaters in places like the Plover River in the Stevens Point area. So we support the opinion of the Attorney General, and quite frankly, the Supreme Court earlier ruled that it's the responsibility and the duty of the Department of Natural Resources to pay very close attention to the implications of adjacent high cap wells on our water systems.
Do you find that your budget has the ability to put initiatives in place to clean up water contamination around the state?
Well, I would argue that, you know, with the resources that we have, we are very diligent to ensure that our water systems, whether it's high cap wells, whether it's a farming community, whether it is well compensation grants that we give to individual homeowners relative to their well on their property that is damaged or broken. We know that, clean water is important to the state of Wisconsin. And Wisconsinites, you know, are educated and smart about clean water. And what they have allowed us to do as the regulator is to make sure to hold people accountable for water quality, but also to ensure that we work with communities to improve water quality, whether it's, you know, ideas like what we need to fund and assist our larger communities that have a myriad of lead laterals on their properties, where there are, again, in our rural communities across the state, where there are just crumbling infrastructure as it relates to wells on their properties where they get their drinking water. And so consequently, when we have, you know, what I would call chemicals or fertilizers getting into the water, we know that it puts children in harm's way. And so that's why we're dedicated to use resources that we have to ensure high standards in terms of water quality.
We're talking with Preston Cole, the Secretary of Wisconsin's Department of Natural Resources, taking your questions along the way at 800-642-1234. Secretary Cole, I want to turn to hunting classes now, hunter safety classes that were initially canceled due to the pandemic. They resumed last week. And there was a lawsuit that was brought against the DNR for canceling the courses, citing the state constitution. Has the DNR come to an understanding with those who have challenged the canceled hunter safety courses?
Well, I just will remind you and your listening audience that that lawsuit was dropped on the 13th of July, consistent with Governor Evers' bounce back program. We were able to bring in more children per class. And so what that allows us to do, we have what I would consider well over 100 classes now scheduled for hunter education. And again, parents get worried, teachers get worried, children get worried if there's too many people. And so I'm glad to report that we are back on with regard to holding and hosting hunter education classes with our instructors around the state.
How have you modified those classes amid the pandemic?
Well, again, social distancing is important. Classroom size, again, is important. And so we've given folks guidance relative to the governor's bounce back program. And so social distancing in those classrooms, and if they're outdoors, even better. And again, our responsibility is to share the information that protects public health during this coursework. And I'm pleased to report that our instructors are well served to follow the lead in terms of keeping kids away from each other during their teaching sessions.
Taking a look now at fishing licenses, even before this spring, over 2 million Wisconsinites had fishing licenses, one of the highest per capita numbers in our country. This year, you're seeing a lot more, 136,000 more licenses compared year over year. What is this due to?
Well, quite frankly, it is the resources that we provide, with, 15,000 lakes and 84,000 miles of rivers in the state of Wisconsin. It is one of the best fishing resources in the country. you know, with we're number three in terms of out-of-state fishing license. So people do make their way to Wisconsin to participate. And we're happy to report that people need space. People need to be outdoors. People understand what being in the outdoors does for us in terms of our mental wellness and our physical wellness, but also our economic wellness. And quite frankly, I'm proud to report again, generations of Wisconsinites have made investments that we're responsible for to make sure that we have clean water, places to fish, places to outdoor recreate. And again, I'm proud of the fact that we are a fishing destination in this country. We're proud of that.
Oh, your phone is breaking up a little bit. I think we can still make that out, but stay with us here. Let's go to David in Milwaukee. Hi, David.
Hello. Hello, Secretary Cole. I'm David Fulweiler in Milwaukee. I am pretty concerned about the Great Lakes water diversion going out to Waukesha, and I'm concerned with the way that the water is coming back. It's coming back in a pipeline through Milwaukee County, and believe it or not, I've read the 2016 environmental impact statement, which was about the size of a phone book, and what I'm very concerned about is that water re-entering the Root River at Northern Racine County. And I just believe that all that water entering that river, which is an impaired river for phosphorus, is going to be like a flash flood. And I'd like to see the pipeline go all the way to Lake Michigan.
David, thank you. Secretary Cole?
Well, David is well-versed in terms of the application process and certainly the infrastructure conundrums. However, as the regulator, we will be working with Waukesha and Water Department to ensure that the return flow of water that goes across that continental divide gets returned in the most beneficial way and the most beneficial process without creating additional obstacles, whether it's water quality or high flows or those kinds of things. And so our responsibility is to follow the science and certainly follow the law. But again, there are a myriad of engineers and hydrologists who will be working on this. So stay tuned. And many of these meetings are open to the public. So I would encourage all of us to pay attention to those public meetings and be there to hear the conversation if you feel as if there's a better notion or a better opportunity, or quite frankly, to hold us all accountable for making sure we make the right decisions.
Secretary Cole, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me, Kate. Again, a big fan of your Drive Time show. It's a good way for us to get our information out. And again, thank you for your listeners. You have some of the smartest listeners and the state of Wisconsin, so we appreciate it. And our door will always be open. Our light will always be on for Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you. Preston Cole, Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Just ahead, congressional candidate Josh Paid on why he's running to represent District 1. You can join in with questions for the candidate Josh Paid, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.